This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory,
oh,
glory.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know the voice already. It's Levin Miller. I want to get in and I want to get right to it. I've got a bit of housekeeping to do. You know, every now and again in life, you meet some people, and although they may be far removed from where you are, and although they may be far removed from your ilk, although you and they may share different generational gaps and you and them may not be able to connect on many things, there are some people that you meet, again, far removed from where you are, who turn out to be quite meaningful to you. This week, I lost a dear friend of mine. Some of you know him as Austin. Some of you know him as Austin Skinny McKenzie. Some of you know him as Skinny. Whatever you know him as, I knew him as my friend from my local, my most favorite local community watering hole. And at the ripe old age of 85, he kind of tiptoed out of here, some suspect, after a short bout with COVID. It is suspected, I believe. But for whatever it is, for whatever it's worth, whatever it is that did take him out of here, I just wanted to publicly convey my sentiments. And he was a really great guy. And if I could live a life like the one Skinny's lived, I think I'm going to be A-OK. I'm talking about at 85 years old, the man is able to walk himself to the local community watering hole should he desire. And he is out there with the boys having a hearty laugh most times you see him. And he's able to keep up. And if you know anything about me, you know one of my greatest goals in life, that the next thing on my list of accomplishments is to wake up one day and be 80. That is the next thing I hope to attain in my life. I've accomplished almost everything that I had set out to do in life. So that's next on the list. So Skinny is like, he is like the beacon that I go towards. I wish to be that. At 85, I want to be able to be strong, walking, talking with all of my own teeth. And so to my friend that has now gone on to the great beyond, Austin Skinny McKenzie, I would like to publicly again convey my condolences to his family and to all of the people that knew him. And I do this not only on my behalf, but I believe I'm sanctioned to do it on behalf of all of us, the senior council members of the local community watering hole. And so I'm gonna play the last call for Skinny because I think he's a general and he deserves a general salute for my friend, Skinny McKenzie. Okay, and so there you have it again. So long, my good friend, at 85 years old, my good friend, Austin Skinny McKenzie. And if you know the convention center, you can go and go down there and pay your respects to the good old boys club. They'll be there. I'm sure they'll be happy to see you. Anyway, that's enough of that. I have with me in studio this morning the Nation's QC. Are you the Nation's QC? He's the Nation's QC. Wade Monroe, he joins me in studio this morning. QC, good morning. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Brother Mother.
Yeah, you know, we have the Nation's apostle, chief apostle. We have the Nation singing bishop and prophet. Is it okay if you are dubbed the Nation's QC at this point?
All QCs would have no difficulties with that.
All right, so let's get right into it. I like when I bring people like Mr. Monroe in studio because he's able to sit here in dual capacities, one as counsel and attorney at law, his second capacity as a political hopeful politician. And so we're able to talk about matters of the law and of policy. And so right out of the gate, Mr. Monroe, I see that there have been many pronouncements in the news in the recent weeks. Ones like employees are going to be required to vaccinate. And I can't help but think that there's going to be a bit of legal backlash from this kind of public pronouncement. Could you give us an idea on the legality or the illegality of such proclamations?
In the Bahamas, you, and like other countries, you're free to say whatever you wish to say. Mm-hmm. To a degree, you're free to do whatever you wish to do so long as you're prepared to take the consequences. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at somebody doing something, the question isn't whether they can do it. It's what will be the consequences of them doing it.
Okay.
Pull
the mic to you for me.
Sorry. So to start, you would look at the whole concept. There's mm-hmm. this concept that we're in a pandemic, that it's the first major pandemic since 1918, mm-hmm. which isn't true. There was a major pandemic in 1968 that killed a couple million people worldwide, mm-hmm. but there was no lockdown or mask wearing for that one, so we don't pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept now is we have a vaccination that's supposed to be our savior. Although they told us that, then they tell us, no, you're still going to have to maintain all of the protocols after you're vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Because we see in the Seychelles, which is the most highly vaccinated countries, having a COVID outbreak now, according to them. So there's this whole concept that this is our savior. And I use these words pointedly and particularly because sure. this is politicians telling you they can save your life,
yeah.
which is sacrilegious.
Right.
And really idolatrous,
right?
Because only one entity can save your right. life. Only one entity gives life. Only one entity takes it.
Yeah. And if you believe that.
And so this is the whole concept that we live in. And so now they came up with these vaccines that have not been fully approved by any government agency anywhere. Mm-hmm. And they now say, this is the answer. Take it in large numbers so that we would be past this. So that's the whole framework that we're operating in. Mm-hmm. We have a framework of freedom. I can choose, for instance, if I get cancer, I can choose not to take chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. I can choose, if I have hypertension, not to take medication, but to try to do it naturally. That is a whole concept. Mm-hmm. And there were whole trials in Nuremberg over crimes against humanity about forced experimentation on people. And so you hear a lot of that going around now in what some people would say are the community described as anti-vaxxers, mm-hmm. which is trying to put people down
a for stigma,
their,
right.
for their point of view.
Right.
So the question now is you have an employer who says, I'm an employer, I am trying to be responsible, what do I do? And the employer says, if the employer says, you must be vaccinated. Well, there are many issues with that. Firstly, mm-hmm. some people conscientiously do not believe in vaccination. It's
right.
a religious thing
right.
with them. And they don't believe it in it at all. The CDC, in approval of emergency use authorization, says really that you can't force anybody to take a drug or a treatment that's approved for emergency use only.
Right.
That's a concept
right.
because it's not finally approved. So they have to have a choice to take it or not to take it. So when the employer comes and says you must be vaccinated, you have to look at the legal consequences of it. Mm-hmm. Forget the morality of it for the moment.
Right.
But what would be the legal consequences if that employer is the government?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Article 26 is the anti-discrimination article of the Constitution says that state actors can't discriminate, so the government can't discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
So if I religiously do not believe in vaccination and the government discriminates against me, they've breached my constitutional right, I can go and seek recourse.
Right, for damage.
So, and discrimination is to subject me to a disadvantage or deny me an advantage because of my political belief, mm-hmm. my creed, my political belief. If you look at anti-vaccination as a political belief, if you look at it from a spiritual belief, some people do not believe in taking these things mm-hmm. into their bodies. The government cannot discriminate. Article 26 makes that quite clear. So
what would make people, what would make people that are as equally as versed in the law as I imagine any lawyer ought to be, make the kind of declaration? Do you see it as fear-mongering then?
No, they might determine that that is a policy they're going to execute, and they might think there are certain consequences that they are willing to bear.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, the government cannot do it. Legitimately, in my view, if they do it, then they'll be subject to action.
Mm-hmm.
So there's governmental discrimination about how you travel based on whether you're vaccinated or not, in my view, breaches the anti-discrimination provisions of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that's something they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to hold them to account. If nobody holds them to account, if nobody comes forward to complain, the excellencies of my legal argument doesn't matter if you don't get a litigant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in my view, the government is discriminating
mm-hmm.
if it offers advantages to people who are vaccinated, because by implication, that's a disadvantage right. to me if I'm not.
Right.
Now, the private business, they think that they can discriminate. And classically, you do have freedom of choice
mm-hmm.
as a private entity, except that there have been a number of developments in the U.S. Who have a similar constitutional provision, where I'm not sure if you're aware of, there's a case called involving the Virginia Military Institute. It's a military school called the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Citadel had a rich history of a male-only military academy till some women wanted to join. And the Citadel said, no, that's against their policy. And the U.S. Supreme Court say, well, that's fine. You don't have to admit women. But if you don't admit women, you're discriminating based on gender. And the government can't do any business with you because the government would be complicit in that.
Right.
And so their choice was to admit women.
Or lose a big
all state interaction and yeah. not, and you wouldn't be surprised that there are females now in the Citadel, right? And the Boy Scouts of America right. was another case in which the Boy Scouts were resisting the admission of homosexual scoutmasters, mm-hmm. and that was a prohibited class of discrimination, and the courts again said to the Boy Scouts of America, yes.
You
can do that, but then you can't have any interaction with the government.
Mm.
And you wouldn't be surprised that the Boy Scouts now admit homosexual scoutmasters.
So you're saying then...
And then the only difference is there was a case you might remember where a cake maker refused to make a cake for a same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
Now, the only reason that he wasn't, as it were, had his license taken from him was because his refusal was based on his religious belief.
Right.
And that was as up for protection as their beliefs. So my view would be anyone who discriminates, any private business who discriminates, they're free to do it. But the case would be that the government ought not to be able to interact with them because then the government would be in breach of Article 26. So, for instance, my colleague, Mr. Scott,
mm-hmm.
when his business license comes up for renewal, if mm-hmm. that is truly his policy, the government shouldn't be able to renew it. The government shouldn't be able to give him a tax certificate because the government would be complicit in his declared discriminatory process.
So you're saying that the
government
wouldn't even be able to collect his taxes because he has a discriminatory policy?
No, the government would have to withdraw all of its accommodation from him. One of its accommodation from him, for of him mm-hmm. is to give him a license to operate. So they would have to withdraw his ability to operate.
Mm. So, but wouldn't he then have an argument for damages? Because
Based on what protected right would that offend of his?
That he has a personal right to operate a private establishment in the manner that he deems necessary, and that he has a right to have a business license. That it is only a function of the state to provide him with a business license.
No, you don't have a right to have a business license.
Okay.
You don't have a right to have a business license. You can apply for one,
right.
and they might give it to you, mm-hmm. but the state would say, because of this business practice of mm-hmm. yours, which amounts to discrimination that is protected, of a protected class, mm-hmm. we, the state, cannot do business with you.
Mm.
So you're free to do it. So, for instance, if he wanted to do something where he gave away food,
mm-hmm.
where he don't need a business license.
Mm-hmm.
He's free to say everyone who works at his establishment must be vaccinated because
mm-hmm.
he doesn't need any accommodation from the state.
Mm.
But so long as you have to interface with the state.
The state cannot be
the argument from the Citadel, from the Boy Scouts case says that the state can't deal with you if you would put them in a position where dealing with you, because that state action when mm-hmm. they deal with you would amount to them, as it were, giving...
Facilitating
your discriminatory behavior. So that would be the issue. And so you would be free to do it.
Mm.
But if I am correct, you'd be free to do it, but the state would have to withdraw all of its accommodation from you.
So let's talk about state discrimination then, because I see there is now also a pronouncement made from the vaccination committee that vaccines will only be for citizens and residents, right? And to my mind, which is not a legal one, instantly that raises red flags because there are many classes of people that are in the Bahamas. There are visiting tourists. There are persons on a work permit. There are persons on a spousal permit, all of which are not necessarily the legal definition of a resident of the Bahamas.
No, they would be.
Would they be?
Yeah.
So then what class would the actual resident of the Bahamas be under? Because there is a class of people living in the Bahamas that are considered citizens or legal residents.
No, but you see, now the question is, do you say legal resident? Resident simply means you live here.
Mm.
You may be an annual resident. You may be a permanent resident.
Right.
You may be a resident who is a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You may be, there's a new class.
No, it's actually it actually says it's going to be limited to Bahamian citizens and permanent residents.
If they say permanent resident.
Right, and if that is the case, then at the very onset, Mr. Monroe, you cut a giant chunk of the people that actually live here out of here. So I'm not really sure, can the government make such a pronouncement and have ethical footing to stand on? With the pronouncement that vaccinations would only be for Bahamian citizens and permanent residents, I think
they I'll put it to you like this: you approach it first. A government has limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite clear to us that our government doesn't have the ability to acquire 800,000 doses of a vaccine, even to cover the 400,000 citizens. Eh?
Right.
So let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they can acquire 800,000 doses of this two-dose vaccine, they can't even vaccinate.
I don't disagree, Mr.
Citizen. And the next point now is this. Mm-hmm. So a government can decide how to use its resources. And that is within the ability of the government. So a government, for instance, could limit its vaccination to its citizenry.
Mm.
Because it's a limited resource.
But isn't the way medicine practice is, it's basically either the weaker among you or the who first come, first serve kind of basis. Medicine ought not be distributed on the basis of financial wealth or race.
No, that's not true at all. If you go to the U.S., for instance,
mm-hmm.
you will be treated on an emergency basis, regardless of your status.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were doing something elective, then you wouldn't be bound to be treated.
Right.
The reality of it is this: what you're seeking to get into now is the logic of what they say about needing everyone to be vaccinated.
Right.
So why would you not vaccinate people who will be within you?
Right.
The reality is, clearly, there's not a swift take-up of this vaccine. And we should know that. But you only have to have common sense to figure out it. How many doses did they have? 30-something thousand?
I think it was 32,000 and then 20,000.
Now, they have already reduced it to people over 18.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people in the Bahamas do you think are over 60? A little bit more than 30,000, eh?
Probably.
So clearly...
The voters register is made up of, what is it, 184,000?
Yeah. So you look at it, and that means that they couldn't have had a high take-up of the over 60s. Mm-hmm. Of even the over 50s, or that would have exhausted all of that supply.
Mm.
So if they wanted to be honest and not just be running a PR event, they could tell us how many people, 80 and over, they've vaccinated, 70 and over, 60 and over, 50 and over, 40 and over, 30 and over, 20 and over, because now they're down to 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that's about... And it's more than 140-something thousand, because that's the people who register to vote.
Right.
A lot of people don't register to vote. Right. So out of 200-something thousand people, you mean you're already down to the 18-year-olds and you only had 30,000 doses,
mm-hmm.
or 30-something thousand doses. It is all a PR event, and it's sad.
Mm.
It's sad to that effect. So jumping up and talking about who you won't give it to is nonsensical if you don't have an oversubscription for the thing anyway.
But do you leave yourself open?
If you were being humane,
mm-hmm.
you would say the purpose of this vaccine isn't to prevent you getting infected. It's to stop you being seriously ill or dying.
Mm-hmm.
So surely you should target the people who are more likely to get seriously ill or die if they were infected.
Mm-hmm.
And exhaust your supply on them first. Because people who may not have a negative outcome from it, why would you vaccinate them and not vaccinate somebody who might get seriously ill, mm-hmm. needing to be inpatient at your medical facility or die,
mm-hmm.
having consumed medical services? So I don't quite understand the logic other than them just wanting to jump up and talk.
Mm.
And talk is cheap. So you're running on with all this stuff. If your objective is to protect your healthcare system, you would prioritize for vaccination the people who are most likely, if they're infected,
to end up in your hospital.
But they don't. Don't appear to be doing that, do they?
No.
Because I can tell you, if an illegal immigrant were to be infected with COVID,
right,
and was to attend at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
All of the conventions and rest would require us to treat them.
And that is what I imagine.
Regardless of their status. So long as they're an emergency patient.
Mm. But okay, so QC, help me with this, right? I get the whole argument around the need for care in emergency situations, right? But the pandemic in itself has been dubbed an emergency. It is the power under which the Prime Minister has been allowed to work under emergency powers for an extenuating period of time. And so can you then say if somebody that has status that doesn't fall in the very small grouping that the government's agency has named, right? Permanent residents and citizens. How then, I mean...
And that's not a small group, you know.
But it cuts out so many other types of people living in the Bahamas. Because that doesn't include spouses. There is such a thing as a spousal permit holder. There is such a thing as a... So there are other groups of people that do not fall in this category that are everyday residents of the Bahamas.
Yeah.
How then, in an emergency situation, deemed so by the government, can the government now say, in its government-created emergency, that these people are not eligible to prevent themselves from being... I guess, left out in the wilderness during an emergency stated by the government?
And not
face legal consequences for that?
An emergency is something that happens unexpectedly. COVID was expected to arrive in the Bahamas. The then Minister of Health, Dwayne Sands, said just that.
Mm-hmm.
The Emergency Powers Act does not provide for emergency regulations or emergency orders to address public health matters.
Mm.
So none of the scheme of the Emergency Powers Regulation or the Emergency Powers Act by Section 3 does not include public health as a reason to make emergency regulations or emergency orders. And that is the basis of a current challenge before the court. And all of your listeners are welcome to go on the government website. It's called the Emergency Powers Act, and read Section 3. That's the section that empowers the Governor General to make emergency regulations. Mm-hmm. So rest that on the side that there's no basis to move for public health matters. And that's there's a good reason for it, you know. The world still remembers what misuse there could be mm-hmm. of public health situations. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get to cancel or subordinate rights for public health concerns. Mm-hmm. Not certainly in our constitutional order. But what you are talking about is whether these folks are being honest and genuine with what they are out to accomplish. And the answer clearly is this is just another area in which they're not being honest and genuine. Mm-hmm. And because if you are to protect our public health system, I repeat, you would prioritize people who are most likely to end up there if they are infected. And your citizenship doesn't determine that.
Right.
And the nature of your residence doesn't determine right. that. We are told that your age and your physical and health conditions,
comorbidity conditions, right,
would determine that.
Right.
And so I, for myself, don't see their effort as genuine. I see their effort as window dressing and PR driven.
So then, counsel, I imagine that there will be some pushback, right? You talked a bit about the powers under the Constitution under which the emergency order can be triggered. I think you said Section 3.
Emergency Powers Act.
Right. Doesn't give leave for the emergency powers to manage health crisis.
Public health matters, no.
Now, there will be people. You know that we have now been in a curfew we've been in a curfew now for a year. And so there will be people who have lost means of income during the period of this year. I trust that once the curfews have been lifted, people will begin to seek damages of the government for loss of wages and et cetera. People will assume that they suffered damage. There have been businesses that have gone out of business during the pandemic, and it was because of the abrupt lockdowns. Some of it has been as a result of businesses just couldn't operate the full amount of hours that they needed to, and so they've gone out of business. Do you imagine that there's going to be a hefty price tag at the end of COVID?
Well, there's currently an action that a group of lawyers, we call ourselves the Justice League, are undertaking. We are at the point now seeking to make it a representative action. Mm-hmm. But indeed, it says that there was no state of emergency when it was declared, because we've had, at least two declarations? Mm-hmm. Is it three now? I know of at least two. We've had two emergency powers regulation. We say that that's outside the power given to the Governor General. And we say that these orders aren't reasonably justifiable in the circumstances. So it's not just closing early. It is the nonsense that you can have a mass, mm-hmm. but you can't bring a casket into the mass with the same amount of persons to have a funeral mass. It's the nonsense that we were all, as Dame Joan Sawyer says, subject of house arrest.
Right.
When the maximum cases topped out at, I think, 104 between March and July.
Right.
But witness now in the month of April, they say we had
120, I think it was.
1,100 cases.
A week. We were doing about 100 cases, 120 cases a week. Or something like that.
So what you have now is, and there was no...
That would mean that last year could not have been an emergency.
Well, last year couldn't be justified, bearing right. in mind...
What's happening now.
Now. But it's just about, and it's not limited to our leader, you know. It's you give a politician the ability to be almost like God, and absolute power corrupts. But power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so they like it. I could tell Levon Miller be in your house at 10 o'clock. Yeah. I could tell the whole Bahamas you can't go on the beach
yeah.
for months and months and months. You can imagine
what power that is. What do you imagine the price tag will be, though?
Well, what you will find is this. Litigation takes a course, and a lot of people do not have the stomach for litigation and will not become engaged in litigation. And so unless we get a representative order, you will only have people who can recover who literally take the pluck up the courage and go to court. That will be the reality. And so we did a case, for instance, with the gaming board where they made a number of people redundant. We succeeded, but not everyone who was made redundant came to be a part of the action. So that always happens.
Okay, so what about then, counsel, people that are, this is saying here, how do we legally address the emergency orders that state that if one has to quarantine, the time is deducted from vacation or sick leave, or there is a cut in salary, especially if you came into contact with COVID, with a COVID-19 positive case on your job? How does the law see that with regards to industrial benefits? Because I know that a lot of the people, particularly those people in the uniform branches, were not being allowed to claim an industrial benefit after catching COVID on the job.
Well, an industrial benefit relates to, firstly, it's more a claim if you lose salary, if you were infected on the job.
Right.
Are you telling me that they're saying that that's not something that the employer is liable for?
No, they're saying that the employer is requiring that they either take the time from vacation time or that they suffer a cut in pay.
Yeah, like, could easily see an action that says that this is due to your negligence and you owe me for loss of earnings.
And so you're saying that if people are suffering, that they ought to get round up enough of them and move a class action suit, is what you're saying?
Well, it's a matter of if, and see, the problem with COVID, of course, is figuring out
where you caught it.
Yeah, but now if they're talking about you are in a workplace and you're exposed to someone in your workplace, you are not infected. So if you're not infected, then you want to come to work. Who prevents you coming to work?
Your employer.
And
because
so,
you should be in quarantine.
And so how would that affect you? You see, as an employee, you don't have a right to actually work, you know. You have a right to be paid.
Okay.
So I could tell all my staff, go home. So long as I pay them, I've not terminated them. So if the employee is ready, willing, and able to work.
I had never heard that. You don't have a right to work, you have a right to be paid.
Well, that's your obligation
right.
is to do the work that I tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
My obligation is to pay you
okay.
what we agree that I will pay you.
Mm-hmm.
If I decide that I'm not going to give you anything to do today, you cannot complain.
Mm-hmm.
The only time you can complain is if I don't pay you.
I like that.
So at the end of the day, if nothing is wrong with the employer, he or she is not ill, and the employer is saying, don't come to my job, don't work remotely, then the employee is ready, willing, and able to work. He's just not been given any work to do. But that's not his concern or her concern.
And what about in the case of where they say it's for the greater good? For instance, I'm a teacher. I've been exposed to a student in a class of, 30. Yet, for whatever the reason is, we found a child. We realized that the child had not come into contact with any of the other children. I came into contact with him at the gate in the office. But for the greater good of the school, you stay at home.
Yeah, that's fine.
No,
but that's fine. I'm ready, willing, and able to work.
So this ought not come out of my...
No, if I'm not sick, right. I am ready, willing, and able to work.
But I'm saying, what if they require me to take these as sick days?
I'm not sick.
Right.
If I get infected, that is a different matter.
Right. But I'm just quarantining.
If I am not sick, I'm ready, willing, and able to work. And the Ministry of Education says they have an online learning platform. So the fact that I'm home doesn't stop me from working. You have chosen to give me no work to do.
Right. But you have an obligation in the law to pay me because that is your obligation.
Yeah. Let's say when you were down on the Defense Force and you show up and you were supposed to jump on the vessel and slip. mm-hmm. and something wrong with the vessel. Mm-hmm. And they say, Miller, just stay on, on the quay side.
Right.
Because there ain't no vessel for you to slip on.
Right.
They got to pay you, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if they tell you, go back home.
Yeah.
They got to pay you.
Yeah. They do this fancy thing where they put you on what they call standby. So you kind of just knock around the base until they figure it out.
But that's because they don't have to give you something to do.
Yeah.
But they have to pay you.
So, Counselor, I want to move a little bit into more state liability. Because, you know, I continue to think about all of the things that have happened during the course of COVID. But there have been things that have not been COVID-driven or centered that I imagine there will be class action suits that will come up. And, I begin to think about any government. Governments are continuous, right? So any government that inherits or is proposing to inherit power must consider how the public treasury will be affected by some of the decisions made under this administration, some of the things that have happened under this administration. And I have actually recently done a show on how the agencies of state do not do their jobs and then they accept no liability for them in the instances where there is failure on their behalf. Sunday, Jenny Street, half of Jenny Street burns to the ground. The fire chief says, I've got 3 trucks on the ground, 1,000 gallons of water apiece. Regrettably, it was inadequate. We tried to lean on a water supply. Regrettably, water and sewage didn't do their part. The water supply was inadequate. Now, I can tell you from my own observation in that very same general area, one is at the Town Center Mall, one is at the corner of Balfour Avenue and Mini Street, where there are fire hydrants that have the caps off of them because I imagine no water comes out of them. If you drive around Baintown, you will see that there are also a few of them like that, where there is no cap on the water hydrant, which means water doesn't come out of it. How much of a state liability is that? And how much of a possibility for class action is there in instances like this, where people that pay their taxes find themselves, no, it is not the government's position to rebuild their homes, as stated by the Minister of Social Services, but it is the government's agency's duty to ensure that water comes out of the fire hydrant.
Yeah, that's the Water and Sewage Corporation.
Right.
And the Water and Sewage Corporation has a very interesting provision in their act. Mm-hmm. And I looked at this on a different occasion at a different venue. But it is, we're a nation of laws, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've made some laws. And the corporation spends a whole heap of money on legal fees now because they sue in everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a private lawyer, not the office of the attorney general, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking about, what the fire chief says is, because clearly if those hydrants are still connected to the water system, it's not that no water is flowing. It's because they must have a shutoff valve, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Or else the water would continue to flow. So right. I have no doubt that they have the ability to turn the water back on. The thing that I heard the chief superintendent saying is they didn't have sufficient water pressure
right.
Which is a matter of the Water and Sewage Corporation not having the pressure. Now, I saw this just the other day. You will be surprised to learn that they have no duty to provide you water. So in Section 20, Subsection 2 of the Water and Sewage Act, it says, notwithstanding any agreement of the corporation to supply water, the corporation may diminish, withhold, or suspend, stop, turn off, or divert the supply of water whenever the corporation may think fit, and without compensation for any loss or damage which may result, whenever the available supply of water shall, in the opinion of the corporation, be insufficient.
Mm.
So they get to send water
where they deem it necessary.
Whenever they
deem it necessary. So if there's no water coming out of, if there is no water coming out of your fire hydrant, it's because the corporation can decide that we needed water somewhere else and this fire hydrant wasn't it. We shut off all the fire hydrants that day.
Yeah.
And be completely covered in the law by that.
Well, be not subject to liability. Now, the question of whether you could do an exotic action to say that is irresponsible. It's a difference if you just have low water pressure across the whole system. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they turn off supply to hydrants. The explanation was low water pressure, mm-hmm. which would mean that that's system-wide in that area. If it was a shutting off of hydrants, then of course you could make a argument that that is that could cause foreseeable harm. Mm-hmm. And if you were to do it, you have to build in the ability to turn them back on.
Immediately.
Yeah, in the case of a fire. Because we know now fire deltas can't, as they did in the past, draw water from ground wells.
Why not?
The old hydrants were actually
right.
wells.
Were ground wells, right.
Because I'm told in any event that the new fire deltas with the... You could get fine sediment in well water... Mm-hmm. That would cause a problem with their pumps.
Mm. Okay.
So the old-fashioned pumps that could have probably grind up rocks.
Mm. These new ones can't handle it.
No.
Mm. Okay, so there's another case that I make. There's a lady that's been struck about a month ago now on the Tony Williams Island Highway, right? I've driven that way myself. If my count is correct, I think there's 6 lamps down between the leg of the Independence roundabout and the Big Chicken roundabout. There are an additional 4, I think, out between there and original parties. There are 2 more out between Charles Anders Highway, Charles C.W. Sawyer's Primary School and Milo Butler Highway. When you go along Milo Butler Highway, they are sporadically lit because there appear to be some of them that are actually missing. The government collects taxes. It is their job to provide the street lighting as, I guess, directed by the architect that designed the road. What then is the government's liability in the instances like the one a month ago where there is a young lady knocked down in an area that is poorly lit because there is no street lighting that has been possibly paid for by these taxpayers?
You would have to first prove causation. You have to then establish which entity is responsible. If it's BPL, you'll find the Electricity Act gives them exemption from liability as well. But insofar as collision at night is concerned, you will have some difficulty establishing liability because cars have headlights.
Right.
So if the headlight is properly working, you should be able to see the road in front of you.
I can tell you from my own experience, though, Council, driving down that highway with my car that has both working headlights, that it is difficult to see people standing on the side of that road or coming across it. I can tell you that from my own experience.
Well, as I say, you would have to show causation, and that will be an argument you will encounter.
Mm. So at what point does the state take liabilities for the misfunction or the misfeasance of its agencies? How do people get recourse in the times when state arms refuse to function adequately?
As I say, you would have seen in the Water and Sewage Act, some of them have statutory immunity.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not have statutory immunity, then the state would be liable for negligence in the same way that any other person is. And so a classic one is where you have these big potholes in the road and your car dropping it and boom, you have serious damage, injuries. In one instance on the airport road, one of my friend's car flipped over a couple times and crossed the lane.
Median, yeah.
Yeah. Now in that case, if the hole was there for a while, if it's an unmarked danger, that's negligence.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you could sue the state for the damage that is caused by that.
Mm.
But people generally don't. They go cast, change their axle, change their tire, and move on.
Mm.
And that is why there's very little done to address it, because there's no cost associated with that negligence.
Now,
if there was a cost associated with that negligence, I would imagine the persons who are in charge with managing it would then look at, okay, we spend $2-3 million because we don't fix the roads properly. Why wouldn't we just pay $30,000 for somebody to drive around and tell us where there's a hole and then fix it immediately or put a warning sign up on it?
Mm-hmm.
But we as people, a lot of us slip down, bust our hip, get up, move on. And so there's no incentive, no financial incentive to address it. We drop in these unmarked dangers, sometimes seriously damaging our vehicles. Mm. We move on. So there's no financial incentive to address it.
Mm. Now, I've enjoyed talking to Wayne Monroe, the lawyer, for a few minutes. I now want to talk to Wayne Monroe, the politician. I know that you have aspirations to contest in the next general election, should the Lord tarry, all people say. We are in difficult times. How do you imagine we reverse ourselves from where we are?
We're in difficult times in terms of...
We are in difficult times. There is mass uncertainty. There is an economy that is functioning. I think the Minister of Tourism is saying something like 80% below where we were 2 years ago. The tourist numbers are down. The revenue generation is down. We are in a state of emergency. If we were, there is talk of an early election looming. It could be quite possible that we go to an early election right outside of an emergency order. Do we take power and go back into an emergency order to give a new government time to get its house in order? Do we come out of the emergency order state so that we can begin to ramp up the economy? What exactly in the mind of Wayne Monroe, the politician, sitting at the cabinet table, would be his advice to his prime minister?
Well, the starting point is there's no guarantee that anybody other than the prime minister will be at the cabinet table.
Agreed. But
I am not presumptuous enough to think that that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, if you look at what has been flowing from the PLP, we have made it clear that emergency provisions are supposed to be short-lived, not long-term, because
mm-hmm.
we've objected to the continuance of this regime that we're in, that it was supposed to be a short provision to permit you to put in place, to upgrade your health facilities and to put in place meaningful laws that bring back the power of Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of it is you get what you get what you make decisions for. So, for instance, you can make decisions to do whatever you want once you bear in mind what the consequences of them are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theme in everything. You can do whatever you want so long as you understand that consequences come with them. The party has said that on taking government, you're not going to be able to talk about we're going to do this without having a period of assessment. So there's been a period of assessment set. We've launched our economic plan,
mm-hmm.
and we say what we are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you come in, God knows what these fellas would have left. So the first order of business, which I thought was very sensible on the leadership to do, is you have to assess where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could take in over in your feed, you're taking over a force of men,
mm-hmm.
and you can say we can do this.
Yeah, I need to know.
And
who
then you, then when you show up,
none of the fellas I thought was to be here, nothing right? They ain't got no gun, and the fella bring me one bucket of bayonets.
So you always have to take an assessment of it. I think what is very clear to the Bahamian public is for 4 years we have been ruled by a bunch of people who are almost like demigods.
Mm.
The arrogance is just amazing. The arrogance of feeling that being elected makes you all-knowing, all-powerful. And the lack of a willingness to listen to anybody about anything
mm-hmm.
is what has plagued this group of people.
Now, we know that they have said in the last PLP administration, we've got 2 minutes, that maybe they were a bit over consulting in some instances. And in these instances, like the one that is a post-pandemic world, there are times that somebody has to pull the trigger. Are you saying to me then that that is not the position of you as a person, and you do, whether you believe it is the position of your party, that there may be instances where we do not have time to consult?
Now, what in the world would happen that you don't have time to consult? That means that you are just flying by the seat of your pants.
Mm.
If you find yourself flying by the seat of your pants, you have failed in your entire planning process.
Mm.
I know this current competent authority said he made some decision before he even went to cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a case when we had, what, maximum 2, 3, 4 people infected.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the excuses for wanting to be a demigod, be they as they may be advanced, do not justify the behavior. Because the decision he made didn't only wreck, and he may not have been wrecked at all, because mm-hmm. he seemed to always come out, the decision shining, always yeah. benefit people around him and connected to him. But the decisions made by these demigods have affected all of us and our children and our children's future long term.
QC, we out of time. Thank you so much for coming. That's my show. I'm going out with my final call, Reveille, for my good friend, Austin Skinny McKenzie. And so if you know him, if you know where he would be, come and say hello to the boys through the corner. And I would appreciate that. I'm Levi Miller. I'm out of here.